Well, as we come to the fourth in our series on navigation points, I think the best way to start is maybe to give some insight into why we call the series and these issues that we're talking about, why we call them navigation points. Because I think a suitable metaphor for life, a suitable image for life would probably be a journey by sea, a sea journey. Because as with a sea journey, so in life we have calm plain sailing where everything's pleasant and lovely, and we have storms where things are turbulent and our ships are tossed backwards and forwards and we wonder whether we'll survive. Things are dark and difficult. In life, as with a sea journey, there are easy times. And just in a flash, a storm can come up and there are challenging times. And so we need navigation points. We need to be able to set a course that we can maintain when the waters are choppy. It's one thing to be able to find your way when you can see far and the waters are flat and everything is calm and you've got your senses all about you. But when things get moeilik and turbulent and difficult, then you can easily lose your way and you can do stupid things. You can make stupid decisions. And so this series is really wanting, while things are calm, while we have the opportunity, let's nail some navigation points in place that can help us keep our sanity right to the very end. And so the three that we've nailed in so far is the issue of God-centeredness, that we want God to be in the center of our picture of reality. We don't want to put ourselves there. In fact, we don't have to do anything to put ourselves there. We put ourselves there automatically. We've got to rip ourselves out of the center and put God there and put ourselves on the periphery of God's picture. So that's the first issue. We've dealt secondly with the issue of logic and reason, that the Bible is not just a jumble of stuff. There's arguments, there's reason, there's a path that can be followed in terms of how A leads to B and leads to C. And so understanding and learning to follow the logic and to be able to reason our way through doctrines and truth and the application of truth is important. And then last time we dealt with the whole issue of authority. And I made the point, and I don't think I overstated it, I think I probably understated it, that one of our biggest challenges in life is to understand this distinction between intrinsic authority and delegated authority, that God himself is the only one who is the very source, the very fountainhead of authority. All authority flows from him, and it flows to us as delegated authority. And so we've got to understand the reality of hierarchies in life. We've got to understand how things fit together, that it's not just a flat system as the Marxists would have us believe, where everything is just all on a level. We're not all on a level. There is a hierarchy. Things cascade down. So we spoke about the three spheres of authority in terms of the family, the church, and the state, and how they interact. Now, one of the storms of life is when we need to answer the question, when is death preferable to life? That's a storm that may come your way or mine. When would death be preferable to life? And I want to mention four possibilities, four scenarios. One is an unexpected pregnancy. Well, however that happened, unexpected. This is not what I need right now. I'm pregnant. What am I going to do about it? That can be a massive storm. And we all know people who have faced that storm and needed to make some choices in the midst of that storm. In addition to an unexpected pregnancy, what about when we have an arrested, tried and convicted murderer? What do we do with him? Do we use a lot of taxpayer money to keep him happy and comfortable and educated and entertained for 20 years? What do we do? What should our attitude be to an arrested, tried, convicted murderer? Should we pity him? Should we fight for his rights? Thirdly, what do we do with a Down syndrome child that is an absolute drain on our energies and our resources? Would it not be better if he just didn't wake up tomorrow morning? What about an aged parent soiling themselves, lost all control of their bladder and their bowel? Wouldn't death be more preferable? They're just sucking up all our funds, and they've made life so difficult. It would be so much easier if they would just not be there anymore. Let's face it, those are all issues, all scenarios that we've all probably been through to a greater or lesser extent. And so when it comes to this issue that we're discussing this evening, the sanctity of life, we need to talk about abortion, we need to talk about capital punishment, we need to talk about euthanasia, and we need to talk about assisted suicide. Because these are not theoretical issues. These are real, everyday things. When it comes to rights, we have a clash. We have a clash between the rights of a woman who surely, some would have us believe, surely has as much of a right to be unpregnant as the man who impregnated her. So surely she should have some say over her own body. But there's a clash between what she believes is a right to be unpregnant. There's a clash between her rights and the right of the baby in her womb. Who's got the greater right? She or the baby? When it comes to rights, we have a clash between the rights of the victim and the perpetrator, whose rights are paramount. And so the big question at the end of the day, the bottom line of this issue of the sanctity of life is simply this: who possesses the right to life and death? Who is it? Is it me in my circumstances? Or is there an authority above me? And the answer is clearly from the Bible that God alone has the right over life and death. He is the giver of it, and he alone is the taker of it. And so we need to answer a few questions tonight. And I'm going to fire these questions at you one at a time. The first one is this: are you thoroughly persuaded, dear beloved fellow Christian, are you thoroughly persuaded that God the Creator has the sole right to give and to take human life? That's not a theoretical question. It's a real question. You've got to answer it. Because depending on your answer, when you get down to some of these storms that we've spoken about, this is going to be the defining issue in your answer. This is what is going to be the thing that actually brings you to this conclusion rather than that conclusion. Are you persuaded that life belongs to God, the right to give and to take it away, and that life is defined by Him? and by him alone. And you'll see the significance of that question as we go along. Do you, dear fellow believer, have any insight into the destructive effect that the theory of evolution, the destructive effect that the theory of evolution has had on the issue of the Creator's exclusive authority over life and death? Because if you have a worldview where it's not the Creator who creates life and has the right over it to define it and to give it and to take it, but you somehow now believe, you buy into a worldview that says, no, life just happens. It just happens and it evolves and it develops and it's just all up for grabs. There's no authority over it. There's no source of it. It's just there. Do you sense where all that will ultimately lead? It'll lead into all these storms where we just are left to our own devices because there's no authority. There's no one to look to. There's no definition. So let me read Nehemiah 6 and Nehemiah 9 verse 6 to you. He says, "You are the Lord, you alone, Yahweh. You have made heaven and the heaven of heavens with all their hosts, the earth and all that is in it and on it, the seas and all that is in them, and you preserve all of them, and the host of heaven worships you." Do you see how different that worldview is to this? It all just, I can't explain it. It just all developed over millions of years. Isaiah 42 verse 5, "Thus says God, the Lord Yahweh, who created the heavens and stretched them out, who spread out the earth and what comes from it, who gives breath to the people on it and spirit to those who walk in it." If we don't have a creationist mentality, that's a huge part of our going wrong. So that's the first series of questions. But now let's become more specific and talk about abortion and how this all relates to abortion. So my third question, fellow believer, are you persuaded that life begins at the moment of conception? There's a moment where it happens. And I realize we're going to possibly collide with medical theory here, or maybe not. But I can imagine, Francois, that in the medical world, there's been a lot of pressure to somehow lose some clarity of definition on this issue. And one can only imagine the pressures that are on those who are making medical decisions under difficult circumstances. But this issue of life beginning at the moment of conception, not sort of, and when you look again, there it is. It sort of gets critical mass and is it this point or that point, but somewhere along the line it happens. We've got to be able to define when life begins. And so the question is a very real one. Are we collectively persuaded that life begins at the moment of conception and that therefore abortion, at whatever stage, if it's on day 2 or whether it's on week 38, it is equally murder. It is the taking of a human life. You see, easily we can get confused with the reasons why this life is now a problem for us and why it needs to be taken. And you can think of the many scenarios there. But if we can't get clarity on this issue, when does life begin? And if what we end that, whatever it is, there in the womb, whether it be at the very earliest stage or at an advanced stage, that is the taking of human life. If we can't get black and white clarity on that, then the decisions and the morality of abortion becomes fuzzy. So question 4, are you persuaded that whatever right a woman has over her own body or over her reproductive health, quote unquote, it does not supersede the right that every human being has, including a one-day-old zygote in the uterus, in the womb, the right that it has over life itself. There's got to be some clarity there, because there's a clash of rights at that point. And of course, this is the very coalface of the abortion debate for the last 50 years and longer. And so we need to ask a sixth question. Do you think there are any justifiable exceptions to the right to terminate a pregnancy? Because you can't be speaking at a braai with anyone about abortion, the pros and cons of abortion, the right and the wrongness of it, without this issue coming up. But what about rape? What about if the pregnancy came about as a result of a rape? What about the issue of a threat to the mother's life? What about the issue of a 42-year-old woman falling pregnant and the chances of her bringing forth a Down syndrome baby are huge? What about that? You see, unless you've got some clarity there as to who has the say over what is right and wrong, and whether the taking of this life is not acceptable, but the taking of this life, that's acceptable for these and those reasons. I think we've really got to come to some black and white understandings of God's sovereignty and man's responsibility. And of course we'll be accused of being naive. Of course we'll be accused of being idealistic. But is that not the only solution in your counseling of this young girl who is now pregnant as a result of a horrible incident that happened at a party over which she had no control? She's now pregnant. I think the only sanity you can give to her is to say, my girl, this thing happened under the sovereign providence of God. God will help you. God is using this to draw you to himself. He'll help you. Have this child. Bring this child into the world. Put abortion out of your mind. Keep your options open regarding adoption. Maybe God is using you as a surrogate mother to bring a baby into this world that will be a huge blessing to someone else 10 months from now. Surely that should be part of our thinking. Because Psalm 139 says what it says, verses 13 to 16, for you formed my inward parts. You knitted me together in my mother's womb. I praise you, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Wonderful are your works. My soul knows it very well. My frame was not hidden from you when I was being made in secret, intricately woven in the depths of the earth. Your eyes saw my unformed substance. In your book were written every one of them, the days that were formed for me, when as yet there was none of them. Friends, when it comes to this issue of abortion, this is not a million miles away from us. It's on our doorsteps if we just open our eyes and our ears. It's happening. It's being spoken of in veiled terms at every braai and every party, because our next door neighbors and our nieces and our friends are facing these very decisions and these choices. They are. This is not something that is out there. It's in our very midst. Jeremiah 1 verse 5 makes quite clear that God knew Jeremiah in the womb and even before that. And so, two very interesting questions. What are the practical implications of our choice of birth control? And I speak from experience here, because when we were young parents, newly married, I wish someone had spoken to us about the pros and cons of different forms of contraception, because there are ethical issues to bear in mind. There is the issue of abortifacient medications that actually cause an abortion on day two or day three. And so there are pills that are acceptable And there are birth control pills that are not acceptable. And from a pharmacological perspective, that's where we need to tap into each other's insight and say, help me to read this little leaflet. How does this pill actually work? What's the mechanism? Intrauterine devices are actually just there to create early abortions. And of course, we can live with all kinds of guilt, and that's where we need to now say, you did that without knowing, without thinking. You repent before the Lord, and the Lord will forgive you for that. You can't undo the past. But it's real. It needs to be spoken about. Young couples considering marriage and considering birth control or family planning need to be told about these things. They need to understand the mechanisms by which these things work. These are the practical implications of the issues of life and death. Here's another issue. If we want to be strongly against abortion as a church, should we then not also be in favor, strongly in favor, of orphan care and adoption processes? I think that's an accusation that has been made against the church. You just want to judge me for being pregnant and not wanting to be pregnant, but what are you going to do about my pregnancy? I think that's where we need to rise to the challenge and say, we'll help you find an adoptive mother. We'll look after you. We'll finance the next 9 months of your care. We'll help you. But that life in your womb belongs to God. We're going to help you. I think we've got to do that. Well, so much for abortion. What about murder? Question number 7 or 8, I've lost count. Are you persuaded that those who malevolently, wickedly, take the life of another person, they commit murder, that they forfeit their own right to life? I think that's a critical, logical conclusion from Scripture. We'll read Genesis 9, verse 6. Whoever sheds the blood of man, by man shall his blood be shed, for God made man in his own image. That the murderer's right to life has been forfeited when he made his decision to murder. Are you persuaded that in such cases the justified death will need to be brought about by the state, acting as the agent of God's vengeance, and that such action will not itself be murder? I remember when I was at the police college, there was one individual who moved around. He was a bit like a ghost. Everyone viewed him as something of an enigma. But he was known as De Luxman. Unbeknown to me, I came to hear that he was the man who worked at Central Prison in Pretoria. The man who pulled the lever or pushed the button or did something. That was his role. He was the one who, back in the days when we still had that kind of punishment, capital punishment in our country. Here's another question. Are you persuaded that in order to uphold the principles of the sanctity of human life, namely that we're made in the image of God as opposed to animal life, human life is the important issue. It's not life per se, it's human life. Because if an animal kills a human being, the animal should die. But killing an animal because it kills another animal, that's not an issue. Are you persuaded that in order to uphold the principle of the sanctity of human life, the death penalty for premeditated murder is necessary as a deterrent against such further crimes? The argument is not whether it actually does deter. That's not the argument. Because you can play with those statistics until the cows come home. But the issue is there's got to be a deterrent. Whether the deterrent actually works or not is not the issue. Ecclesiastes 8 verse 11, because the sentence against an evil deed is not executed speedily, the heart of the children of man is fully set to do evil. There's got to be a clear understanding in the culture that if you are guilty of premeditated murder, yes, we'll go through all the checks and balances to make sure that there's absolute justice and no injustice, thinking of people that get unfairly accused. We understand that potentially happens, but let's not hide behind that, because there is this issue of deterrence. Numbers 35. If anyone kills a person, the murderer shall be put to death on the evidence of witnesses, but no person shall be put to death on the testimony of one witness. Moreover, you shall accept no ransom for the life of a murderer who is guilty of death, but he shall be put to death. And you shall accept no ransom for him who has fled to his city of refuge, that he may return to dwell in the land before the death of the high priest. You shall not pollute the land in which you live, for blood pollutes the land, and no atonement can be made for it, for the land, for the blood that is shed in it, except by the blood of the one who shed it. You shall not defile the land in which you live, in the midst of which I dwell, for I, the Lord, dwell in the midst of the people of Israel. And then, of course, Romans 13, verse 4, which we alluded to last week. For he, that's the state, is God's servant for your good. But if you do wrong, be afraid, for he does not bear the sword in vain. For he is the servant of God, an avenger who carries out God's wrath on the wrongdoer. One of the things that has happened in my lifetime is the theory of prison sentences has moved from punitive to corrective. So we now have the Department of Correctional Services. It should be the Department of Punishment. That if you go to prison, it's tough and it's ugly and it's terrible because you don't want to land up there. But now if you go to prison, if you don't have a place to live, commit a crime. You'll go and live at the state's expense, warm and dry and clean and fed. That's not how it should be. And that's part of our problem. So the next question, do you see any inconsistency between being pro-life against abortion, but at the same time also being pro-capital punishment? I think that's one of the tensions that Christians have got to live with. We are against abortion, the taking of a child's life, but we are completely for the taking of a murderer's life. And so these issues, I think, do need to be thought through. So much for abortion and murder. What about euthanasia and assisted suicide as we rush to a close? Question, do you think there are any situations where it will be justifiable to deliberately bring about someone's death? So, someone wants to die. That man this morning. For those who don't know, he wrote a note on the back of his bulletin, if I take my life, will God be angry with me? And he passed it to JP van Rochrenberg, the van Rochrenberg boyfriend. And they then alerted, I don't know how you got involved, Rinus.
So before church.
Was it before church? So you've been thinking about it already. But they were horrified. They said, we've got to do something. So what do we say to someone who wants to take their own life? Is suicide, specifically physician-assisted suicide, is that something that we should support? Do people have the right to take their own life? The reality is that suicide is self-murder. You do not have the right to take your own life. And we could speak at length about that and the consequences and where that has gone theologically down through church history. But what about when we start debating whether or not someone's life has actually ended? If they've got no brainwaves, are they still alive? If they've got no heartbeat, are they still alive? If the only heartbeat they've got is coming from some kind of machine, are they actually still alive? If they have no nerve and muscle response, are they still alive? That's not an easy question to answer. And of course, I don't have a particular opinion about that. If the professionals say, look, I think this person's actually clinically dead, and if we switch off the monitors, I'm telling you that within 30 seconds there'll be no activity. You know, what do we do? I think there needs to be. We know when Maureen's mom was in hospital, the nurse came to us and said, if we turn the oxygen down, she'll be gone momentarily, and that was the case. We just said, well, if it's just the oxygen going through her nasal passages that's keeping her alive, then she's not really alive. What about a lack of quality of life. And you think here in terms of old people. What about the cost of their care? You know, having a carer, having this person in assisted living is just eating up the family's finances. What do we do? Do we give them an injection? These things really need to be thought through because of the basic black and white issues of who has the right over life and death. God alone has. We could speak, and time has gone on, the bioethical issues of stem cell research and in vitro fertilization. What should our attitude be there? Because if we are going to go for IVF, we've got to realize that they're going to fertilize a number of eggs, most of which will be discarded and aborted. Only a few will be implanted for the sake of pregnancy. Can you see the dilemma? And what are the ethical issues attached to that? Those are difficult issues, but there are issues that need to be thought through. And so in conclusion, I simply want to ask this question. Are you persuaded that unless we all deliberately and intentionally think through these issues so that we can speak up and, where necessary, act against the culture of death, it will simply and increasingly become the accepted norm at both ends of the spectrum, at the beginning of life and at the end of life? And we will get where many places in Europe and Canada and elsewhere are, that if we don't think this life is worthy of life, then we just simply terminate it. We terminate it at state expense if necessary, and we're the boss. Yeah. Well, I've lost track of time. There we go. 32 minutes. That's not too bad. Any comments? Any questions? It's a lot to think about. I know I asked you 64 questions.
Are all these questions that you spoke about, all these cases that you spoke about, are they all cut and dried?
No, I think it would be naive to say they're cut and dried, but I think we still need to be able to reason through the pros and cons. So I don't think we should suggest that people who come to different conclusions to us are idiots. But we do want to ask them who their authority is and who they're seeking to honour and to obey and to submit to. Because I suspect that there's a lot of pragmatism involved most of the time in terms of people with vested interests and the money, etc., etc. And so there are principles that need to be applied, and we're not sure that we're all working. In fact, we're pretty convinced that we're not all working with the same principles.
And if they overstep one of these circumstances that they're in, is it acceptable to us as the church?
Well, look, the reality is that in many situations our attitude as a church means nothing because it's not directly related to us. But if we were to come across a pastoral scenario where we now need to get involved and we need to sensitively and compassionately be giving some counsel, that's a different story. We can't just walk away. We can't wash our hands of the situation. And we pray for wisdom in these situations. So I think maturely we need to acknowledge that these aren't simple issues. In theory, they're simple issues. In practice, they can be more complex. And so we need great wisdom, but we need to be working and praying about these things together. We need to be thinking through whilst the waters are calm. How do we respond? Are we happy when at the braai this girl says, well, I'm just thinking of going for an abortion, because what does it matter? I mean, this is such a cruel world. I don't want to bring a baby into this kind of world. I didn't ask for this pregnancy anyway. Are we going to speak up at that point, or are we just going to say, no, you're right, it's not my monkey, not my circus? Yeah.
Just that, yes. I don't think there is a tension between being both pro-life and pro-choice. Pro-capital punishment.
Yes.
Because both of those convictions are based on the theology of the image of God.
Yes.
So we believe the life of the murderer should be taken because he has killed someone made in the image of God. We yes. believe the baby's life should be preserved because it's made mm. in the image of God. So we have those. That's the principle that we are acting on.
Yeah. We get accused of inconsistency,
yeah.
though.
Yeah.
And so that then is what creates it as a tension in our yeah. minds. But you're absolutely
yeah.
right.
Yeah.
Yeah. The principle of the image of God that needs to be honored and protected. Mm. Yeah.
Another thing that's interesting is that in Afrikaans, they moved away from the language of self and worth to self-worth.
Ah.
Because obviously it's a sort of euphemism. You need to soften the...
Yes.
No one's being murdered here because I'm taking my own life.
Yes. It's mine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What is
the word? Sorry.
Self-do-it. Yeah.
Yeah. Self-death rather than self-murder. Yeah.
I see the UK has just voted in favour of it.
Yeah. Yeah.
As far as IVF goes, I don't think a lot of people have ever been going for IVF have been counselled
mm-hmm.
about those eggs that are not being used.
Yes.
What
happens to them? Yeah.
What happens to them?
Mm-hmm.
And some people are not even aware.
Yeah. Of it. That's a very real thing. That there's great ignorance,
mm-hmm.
And so you almost people actually find their ignorance a good hiding place.
Mm-hmm.
You know, don't give me the details. I don't want to know.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's similar to we had a DVD once in our HFG of an abortion, and the camera was right inside the person.
Yeah.
And you could see the baby shying away from those tongs.
Yeah.
While they pulled the legs out and pulled
yeah.
the arms out.
Yeah.
And it all fitted in a ball's jar.
Yeah. Amazing.
And they take that jar away from the patient.
Mm.
She mustn't see mm. that at all.
Yeah.
Because then she will.
But often these anti-abortion ministries show those pictures because they're shocking.
Yeah.
Because many many women who go for an abortion actually don't know what it actually involves.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I know in the options ministry, just having a sonograph so that you actually see in sound waves what is happening inside your body, that often saves the life of a child because the mother suddenly realizes it's not just a clump of tissues. This is a formed human.
Stop.
Yeah.
85% of the time.
Yes.
Can I ask my question?
Oh. Yes.
Misschien gaan ek te ver, maar sê maar met capital punishment, dit gebeur ons nie dadelik nie. As die moordenaar intussen regtig die moes het en hy word miraculously wedergebore, gaan ons hom nog steeds doodmaak?
Yeah, no, I do think that the principle needs to be applied. You took a life, you forfeit your own life.
Mm.
What's going to happen with you in eternity, that's God's business. Because part of the issue is, how do we know that you really are, is this just remorse?
Mm.
Are you actually just playing a manipulative game now, that now we've got to feel sorry for you because you actually are repentant? We don't know. So I personally would say, no, the principle is plain. You took a life, you forfeit your life.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think of the statue of justice is the woman that's blind.
Yes.
So they have still things. It's hard, but it's blindfolded. You need to make adjustments.
Yeah. Yeah.
Perhaps the true test of knowing if a person is saved, if they say, no, I took a life, therefore I need to be put in it.
Yes. Yeah.
It might actually be the real
reason. Yeah.
And your distinction between the church and the state, this comes into view here, that
yes.
the church is not the arbiter of life and death when it comes to capital punishment. They're in the business of regeneration.
Yes.
But the deacon of God, who is the state,
yes.
he's supposed to exercise
yeah.
execution.
You know, this became very real for us just after we were called to Brackenhurst. The truth of the Lee Matthews murder came out. It's one of the Brackenhurst church members who had murdered her. And the elders wrote a letter to the Minister of Justice demanding his death. And his parents were in the church too, and still are to this day.
And in two cases, just answering the lady, can I speak in English? In two cases, God severely punished those two men who had taken blood.
Mm.
In David's case, he said, you're not building my temple,
mm.
your son will. And in Moses' case, you shall not enter the land of Canaan.
Mm.
So God takes a very dim view.
Mm.
Even although you repent,
mm.
it's still there.
Yeah, of course, in Moses' case, he was withheld entry into the promised land because of his disobedience, not his murder. Your point is made.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes?
I think something that also has complicated issues in this day and age with the LGBTQ situation is, and I know a couple of cases of this, where now, say, our two fellows want a family of children. They get married, and then they donate sperm, and they get fertilized IVF, or insertion into a lady, and they have to go into a lady, at the moment they can't completely throw the baby in the bottle.
Yeah.
But, you know, then of course there's children as a result of that.
Yes.
And that's also creating a big issue.
It is, and it's becoming a more and more common issue. Any final comments before we bring the plane into land? No? Good. Let's stand and sing as we end our Lord's Day.